Madam Speaker, it's a good bill.
Frankly, I'm embarrassed.
The President of the Senate called a hot mess.
Ole Insider is an educational journey through the Washington State Legislature, following interesting and important bills through the legislative process.
This is a serious matter, Mr. Speaker. We're moving the wrong direction here.
Ole Insider is produced by Positive Intentions Media, hosted by citizen volunteers Erica Engelhart and Jay Fratt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, rising in support.
And it's the right thing to do.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Ole Insider. This is Erica Engelhart, and I'm here with my friend Jay Fratt.
Yeah, that's me.
So this is episode 8 of season 2, and we have a packed show for you today. So we are going to do an update on the agency request bills. So Jay today was down there. Two of the bills had hearings today, so he attended those. And I unfortunately was not able to attend, so he is going to tell us all about what happened and give us some updates on the bills.
Yeah, how are you doing with the life of a citizen volunteer while also being a mom, while also being a wife, while also holding down a job?
Well, you know, it is a lot to juggle, but I do think that if I wasn't busy, that I would be bored. So, you know, I just kind of roll with it.
Yeah, and I got to meet a fellow citizen volunteer today. A friend of mine from X, Stephen Shutt, came to Olympia and testified on one of these bills. So it was an exciting day. Got to meet another person that I've networked with for the last couple years on a lot of these issues.
Awesome. Yeah, I like the shout out. That was a good idea.
Yeah, so let me tell you where we're at, because essentially we're updating what was it, episode 6, where I released this op-ed that got picked up by Center Square, and it was on agency request bills with the juice of 5068, which technically is not an agency request bill. That's the temporary visa hiring. So it's essentially, I highlighted a suite of 4 bills. It was one that had both a Senate and a House bill. The House bill died, but the Senate bill passed. That's 5925, and that concerns general powers of the Attorney General.
Okay.
Then there's 2156, and that's regarding the authority of investigators for the Attorney General, another agency request bill. And that passed the House and currently sits in the Senate, where it's going to have its first committee hearing on the 20th of February. And then there's 2096. Now, that's one of the 4 that has officially died. That I don't believe that can be resurrected. 2096, which was the clandestine portion of the suite of bills that would allow like secret anonymous clandestine IDs for these attorney general investigators, that has died. And then finally, the one we've been fighting for 2 years now, 5068, that passed the Senate and it was in committee today that I went to. Stephen Shutt gave testimony on that. So it's kind of an update on where we're at. I will also say 2156, the investigatory authority of the Attorney General that passed the House. It was interesting that did not pass on a party line vote. There were 4 Democrats, I believe, that came over and voted with Republicans against it.
That is interesting. Very interesting. I also want to share with the audience, because you had shared with me that since you released this op-ed, it has now been circulated around through the legislature. So several of them have seen this and read it. So they are now in tune with all of these agency request bills. Isn't that right?
Yeah. And I mean, it's exciting to be able to participate in the process as a citizen. The op-ed that got published in Center Square was used, shared within the caucus. I went and distributed it to key ranking members of certain committees. And then Jenny Graham, Representative Graham, said to me today that she made copies of it and shared it with the caucus. And another representative, Matt Marshall, contacted me and said that it was well received and that people were consuming it. But beyond that, you know, these are the experts. You know, when you get to the House side, I won't speak to the Senate, but when you get to the House side, you've got a lot of representatives that are very in tune with tactics and looking at things from not just the granular bark of the tree, but also the forest. And that's what's sneaky about these suite of bills is that, well, you know what? Let's go to an interview I had. I went and got a soundbite from Representative Burnett. And Representative Burnett was a key figure to me because as I look at 5925, he sits on the committee, the Civil Rights and Judiciary Committee in the House that heard 5925 today. And then he also was on the committee, issued amendments on 2156 when it passed the House. So I thought that he was pretty in tune with the suite of bills and the larger dangers. Let's play the clip I got of Representative Burnett on this, on the dangers of these suite of bills.
Well, obviously, it looks, in my perspective, the AG, if you look at just one bill, it seems good, right? Hey, we're trying to make local government and efficient to work with our state government, and we're here to help you. But what have we seen in the last 10 years that says the state is here to help local government, especially in police powers? I haven't seen that. As my time, 25 years in law enforcement, my 12 years as an elected sheriff, I spent a couple years as a criminal justice training commissioner. So now what we see is you look at all of these different bills, whether it's 2156, 5925, and you're going to see more, I believe, in the near future, to say one or two by itself seems explainable. But when you look at the totality of the circumstances, I don't think this is by happenstance. I actually think this is by design, and they probably got more lined up saying, hey, we'll run these and then we'll run these, and by this time we'll have control and we can do what we want to. And it's not healthy. It is, in my mind, a state police power, and it's very dangerous.
Okay, so first I just want to say that, you know, sometimes when I'm looking at things and you know, I'm thinking about things, I feel like, well, am I reading too far into this? You know, am I being a conspiracy theorist or something? But he explained exactly how I feel, you know, and mentioned about, you know, that he expects more of these bills to come our way. But that he explained exactly what I feel like is going on. So it's kind of nice to have some reassurance. I'm not the only one thinking that way.
Yeah. And as you know, the attorney general's office referred to me as a tinfoil hat, but at the same time, my op-ed is really resonating with a lot of legislators and seems to be dead on target. This is a massive change in the way the attorney general's office operates in Washington state under the Constitution. And that comes up. If we can talk about, the first bill I want to talk about is 5925. And that's concerning the general powers of the attorney general's office. That was the hearing this morning. I think it was at 8 a.m. And there was one question and answer session that I got a really good soundbite on. And then there was amazing testimony given by a guy by the name of McCollum, who's a prosecuting attorney in Spokane. But really quick, I went and I wanted to make sure I brushed up on like what the role of the attorney general's office is. And I looked in the Constitution. And it says the its core mandate stems from the Washington State Constitution and the state statutes which establish the Attorney General as the legal advisor to state officers and require them to perform other duties as prescribed by law. And so I talked to Jim Walsh about, hey, you know, shouldn't this be a constitutional amendment? And he pointed out to me, which would require 2/3 vote in the House, not simple majority. Mm-hmm. And he pointed out to me, the key phrase there is perform other duties as prescribed by law. So through simple majority, laws can be changed that expand the powers of the Attorney General's office. And then secondarily, when it comes to, okay, what is the role of the Attorney General's office currently? And I found this section very specific, criminal matters limited. The office has no original general criminal jurisdiction that's primarily with county prosecutors. It can investigate and prosecute crimes only when jurisdiction is referred by a county prosecutor, the governor, or in specific rare instances, and the attorney general accepts. So once again, this is flipping that on its head, creating a parallel structure from the Attorney General's office where they can go and investigate crime without an original jurisdictional referral.
Yeah.
I
just want to point out that a moment ago you said a key word that stuck with me, and that was that they are to advise these other bodies. Advisor, you know, that's very different than having your own investigative department here.
Correct. And, you know, I always used to look at the Attorney General's office as the state's top cop. Well, it's not really. It's the state's top lawyer.
Yes.
So let's go. I've got Jim Walsh asked, as he usually does, has a precision question within the committee. Let's go to that soundbite.
Let's go.
I'm going to follow up a little bit with Rep. Graham's first question, which is basically who watches the watchman. What is your process for checking the administration and execution of civil investigation demands, whether under the new ability and the new context which they could use in this bill or existing? What is your process to make sure the system for issuing these CIDs is proper and constitutional and legal?
So we have several various statutes and laws that we currently issue civil investigative demands for and through across the office. Each division, the various divisions issue these. So I can say for the Civil Rights Division, we have to determine whether there's likelihood of a violation of one of the laws that we enforce and determine whether we think that this will be, that investigative demand is a tool needed to provide reasonably reliable evidence of an investigation, like of an enforcement matter. So there's rules of professional conduct for all of the attorney staff to follow, and that funnels all the way up to the top, our main supervisor, which is the Attorney General.
So the answer is you watch yourself.
Jim really cracks me up. He's always got the right thing to say at the right moment.
Yeah.
But let's back up a little bit. So CID, Civil Investigative Demand. But I'm not sure I understand what that exactly means. Can you explain that to us?
Yes. Yeah, so... And this is ironic in our current lens perspective of this day and age, because a civil investigative demand is an administrative subpoena. So the left is complaining about ICE and Immigration's Custom Border Enforcement using administrative subpoenas to go after illegal aliens, right? Well, now they're trying to give the Attorney General's office this expanded use of civil investigative demands, okay, which is an administrative subpoena. And to Jim's point, well, who's watching over them? So this entire suite of bills is the antithesis to the projection of the Democrat power in Washington state. In other words, the Democrat power in Washington state is complaining about the executive branch using their powers, right? They want a more limited executive branch. All the while, our state Democrats are seeking to expand the executive powers of the Democrat Party through these various positions like the Attorney General.
That's crazy. It's almost like they wish they thought of that first or something, you know, because how can they really be against it if they want to expand their own ability to do so?
Yeah, whether you want to call it hypocrisy, projection, that is the current circumstance, is they are fighting what they view as executive overreach while trying to codify their own executive overreach. And I want to zip up 5925, which just got passed to executive session within the committee, but there is a piece of testimony that just out of the park, knocked it out of the park, better than a representative, better than myself, better than anybody has been able to state it on the dangers of expanding these attorney general powers through Senate Bill 5925. It's stated by, let me find this gentleman's name, prosecuting attorney out of Spokane, Preston McCollum.
All right, let's see what he has to say.
Chair Taylor, members of the committee. As a county prosecutor, this bill is very concerning to me. One of my primary concerns, and I disagree with my colleague from the Attorney General's office, this bill does grant the Attorney General's office new investigatory authority and new power. It essentially grants the Attorney General's office the ability to investigate separately elected constitutional offices. Any person or entity is potentially subject to this investigative authority, and that includes all of you. So assume there is a different attorney general within this office. If there is an allegation or suggestion that any one of you violated the Constitution of the state or the federal constitution, for instance, voting for legislation that a partisan individual might believe is contrary to one of those state or federal constitutions, you can also be subject to this investigative authority. It includes our auditors, our treasurers, our judicial officers. There is no restriction here. There are no judicial safeguards here. As a prosecuting attorney, when I have to delve into somebody's private affairs, I need judicial safeguards such as a warrant. I need to be able to state that I have probable cause that would cause a reasonable judge to issue a warrant to allow somebody to go into somebody's home, into their business, into their private affairs, or compel them to testify. This bill does not have any of those judicial safeguards, and in fact is a brand new tool because it permits the Attorney General's office to then go on fishing expeditions into separately elected offices, into businesses, and into any number of private affairs of our citizens. It applies to the mommy blogger on Facebook, and the same way it applies to the small business owner, in the same way it applies to the corporate entity, and in the same way it applies to every potential government agency. It applies to a mayor, to a city council, to a board of county commissioners, to each of the legislators, to prosecuting attorneys, and to law enforcement, as we heard from Mr. McMahon. There are no judicial safeguards. There's a potential gag order that would preclude a person being investigated from telling anybody about it. And more importantly, there is no requirement for judicial oversight during the pendency of this matter. So unlike a grand jury or a special inquiry, it allows carte blanche investigative authority, and that's problematic for our system of government.
Oh, man. I mean, he just laid it out. I need to give that gentleman a phone call and say, wow, powerful, amazing testimony.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that that's one key thing that a lot of people don't consider in this. You know, people in power, you know, or a party in power even, they don't ever really seem to consider what happens when the roles are reversed. How could this affect us, you know, if the roles are reversed, you know, if there's a different attorney general, as he mentioned. So I think that was great testimony. I really like that. I do think you should give him a call.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It does seem like an office like Attorney General is supposed to be objective.
Yes.
And in partisan politics, in modern partisan politics, we've lost all objectivity. You know, where, you know, he is supposed to be going after consumer fraud. Like, he's supposed to be protecting all the citizens of the state of Washington. Instead, it seems like they're using the office as a tool of their partisan politics, their ideology.
Yes, absolutely. So that's very concerning. But I do know that we have another bill that had a hearing. Should we move on to 5068 so we can get an update on that one?
Yeah, absolutely. For the sake of this podcast, we need to keep moving. today. I was actually in person in the committee hearing room for 5068. We don't need to give a lot of updates. People that have been following the podcast, we've been covering this one for 2 years. If you're new to the podcast and you're new to 5068, this would allow temporary visa hiring in civil service positions like firefighters, police officers, anywhere with limited or general law enforcement abilities. That would also include these investigators and this new powers of the Attorney General. It would include prosecutors. So there's a lot of different positions that are typically reserved for native citizens in Washington state law, where it would open that up to temporary visa hiring. So we've been covering for 2 years, so you can go back and look at the Ole Insider podcast if you need to get caught up in that way. Erica, do you want to go? I've got Stephen Schutt, who I met from X, who's been a tremendous advocate on visa corruption in the tech industry, and he came and gave a good testimony. But Representative Graham also had a very interesting question of the sponsor, Senator Lovick, of this bill.
Okay, which one are we going to listen to first?
Let's listen to Representative Graham. And just to update people, it passed through the Senate. Last year, it passed through the Senate unanimously. This year, it passed through the Senate on party line votes. Republicans voted against it this year. Thank God they changed their vote from last year. But this is the primary sponsor, Senator Lovick. And now the bill is in the House, and this is its first committee hearing.
And if there are no records from some of these other countries as far as what an individual may or may not have done, that would disqualify them for a job as a prosecutor or in law enforcement. That's really, really concerning. And especially with some of these attorney general bills that we're seeing, we're talking about prosecutors also that could be hired that are undocumented foreign nationals now either being involved in our law enforcement or prosecutors, and they're not U.S. citizens. So what has changed between that? This is the exact same bill, correct?
It is. You know, I don't know how to answer that question when you talk about the potential or the possibility of a person maybe putting misinformation on the visa. Maybe staff could help, but I just don't know how to answer that that question.
You know, I think she had a really important question there, because it is true with a lot of these people that are coming from other countries, we don't have access to their criminal records or their, you know, history to be able to determine if these people should be qualified or not to be in these certain positions. And I can't believe that he hadn't even thought of an answer for that. So that's really shocking.
It is shocking, his answer, but I would tell you, if you go and watch that committee hearing on TVW, that was his typical answer. At one point, he said, I think I need to phone a friend.
Oh, my goodness.
He did not have intelligent answers on the topic. And you're exactly right. Graham is exactly right. This is a potential Trojan horse, most sensitive areas of our employment within governance, and we're going to hire temporary visa holders. There is no telling the kind of agents that might flock in with foreign interests in mind instead of the duties of that civil service position. So it's, and just the vetting, just the they mention that in other countries they may not have the records that we have, the vetting, the going and looking into who they are and their backgrounds, that would be far more difficult than when you're hiring an American citizen.
Absolutely, because, you know, they would have access to those records if it's an American citizen, but not from other countries, especially if they're, you know, ones that maybe don't necessarily get along, you know, with our government, that these people might be trying to flee their government, you know, so that'd be very difficult to get any background at all.
So finally, my friend Stephen Schutt came and gave testimony, and it was amazing testimony in the fact that he took an angle and attacked that nobody in the room expected. And I'll say something up front. The chair usually stops testimony when it comes time due. This testimony was so compelling, the Democrat chair allowed him to continue after the two-minute mark.
Oh, I'm very curious. You got to play it now so I can hear what he said.
My name is Stephen Shutt. I'm from Gig Harbor. How long do I have? 90 seconds?
About that, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm a software developer in this region, and you might wonder why a software developer is testifying. I don't have a very big sign, but in tech, you can see this is Google alone, what they've done. In 2023, they laid off...
I'm sorry, we don't allow props, so if you could just read it.
They laid off 6,500 U.S. tech workers, and then they turned around and sponsored 5,400 people on H-1B visas. They claimed this, they had overhired during COVID. They were lying, and they pushed these people out so they could bring in replacements, and... what I've seen, it is a disaster. This is one company, but every big tech company is basically doing this, and it's resulted in mass layoffs. All these companies in 2023 did about a 10% cut, and then trying to find another job resulted in, it took some people about 12 months. Usually it takes 1 to 2 months to find a new job. I had people saying that they were out of work for 12 months. And then when they found a new job, they had to take a 30 to 40% pay cut because of the wage suppression that was going on here. And I came down here because I want to let everybody know that the firefighters, the law enforcement, I have a lot of friends in that industry. This is an anti-worker provision. And it's a way for them to like you say there's a shortage of workers, a shortage of law enforcement, police officers. It's actually not true. You need to raise wages. We have constant complaints about affordability in this state, and it's because we're suppressing wages in the tech industry. Well, if this comes into these sectors too, the same factor is gonna have the same effect. The reason I came down is I started interacting with a labor union rep for the Pierce County Fire Department on social media last year when this was proposed. And as I was discussing with him, he was like, wow, this is really bad in tech. And he basically said, you guys need a union. I was like, but you're not actually standing up for your own members. And there was a big disconnect between the union leadership and the union representatives and the lobbyists and what was the interests of the actual workers. I have friends in every single one of these agencies. And, you know, my heart goes out. My wife is an immigrant. I don't hate immigrants at all. We love them. But the idea that this is not going to have an effect on the workers that are here is completely false. And I'm happy to back that up.
You know, I really love the passion that he had there in his testimony. And I'm glad that the speaker or the chair let him finish what he had to say, because that is a very good point. And you're right. Nobody has really talked about that point at all. It is completely going to affect this industry. These industries, because it's several, right? I really am glad that he came down and shared that with everybody. And I hope that they take it seriously.
Yeah, it gets to the heart of it. Not only are these foreign workers, these foreign nationals, beholden to their boss for their stay in America and their employment, but it also suppresses wages for everyone else when they're hiring these foreign nationals over U.S. citizens. It's an excellent point. He's seen it in tech. And I met with Stephen afterwards, and Representative Graham was so moved by his testimony, she came out and found him in the hallway and wants to hear more of his perspective. And it's important when we talk about testifying on bills. You just saw right there, Representative Goodman, the chair of the committee, he's a Democrat. This is somebody who's testifying con. He let him go on, not just because of the passion, but because of the acute information that Stephen was providing. And sometimes I see a push for people to testify, but they're testifying so much that in their reading things and you know, I see a lot of testifiers read the bill as if the representatives need to be told what the bill does. You need to have more citizens stepping forward that are experts in fields that have something new and important to the discussion, not just, you know, I'm here and I'm
repeating it.
Yeah, repeating it, and I'm voting con, or I'm testifying against. I'm not saying it's bad to testify. I'm just saying there are those some out there that they repeat, they testify so much that you can see the representatives' eyes glaze over. They don't really give them as much credence. Whereas if we can get experts in fields and people that have really something important to say on the topic. The last thing I'll say is I felt a bit of shame because I didn't sign up to testify on this bill. And Stephen, and I thought 5068 was very important. Stephen was the only testifier to come in and testify con on the bill. So he filled just a tremendously important role. And I thought there would be more testifiers. I feel shame I didn't testify. We're gonna have to pop that cherry sometime.
Yes, you're going to have to get out there and do that. But, you know, it just goes to show we all, you know, we're all in different walks of life. You know, we may agree on some things, we may disagree on some things, but we're all good at different things. So if you hear or see a bill that is relevant to what you know, definitely it's your responsibility to stand up and testify for that. Because if you can be like Stephen here and give information that nobody else could really provide or did not provide, it's very valuable and it can make a big difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we can make an impact in different ways. I wrote that op-ed article. It got distributed to the Republican caucus. It kind of started this ball rolling of thinking of all of these agency request bills as a total package instead of individually. Stephen comes in, gives this testimony. We're talking about political ends that we can take to highlight. Like, for example, we're thinking about contacting firefighters and telling them that their union is in favor of this, that their representative and calling out their representatives and trying to educate on this issue so that we can get pushback coming from multiple angles to kill this bill, the bill that will not die.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
All right. Well, that's it. That's the show. We somehow got through this complex mess.
Yes, it was. You know, thank you, Jay, for being down there and being a part of it and being in the mix, because I think that's really important. And you're able to share it with people like me.
Absolutely. And we got another representative that's never been on the Ole Insider podcast before, Representative Burnett. So I'm excited about adding another one on our list of insider original quotes and sound bites. That was exciting. I guess
very exciting.
I guess we'll see everybody on the next show.
Yeah, you'll all have to tune in to see who we hear from next week.
All right. Peace.
Bye, everybody.
Let us take a step back and let us reason together.
The legislative process can be intimidating. Let's go through it together.
If you could focus on the policy and not motives, please proceed.
Like and subscribe to Ole Insider on your favorite podcasting app. All resources and show notes will be available for each episode at oleinsider.com.
Mr. Speaker, I've stood up on the House floor repeatedly this year.
You can follow Erica Engelhart on X at For the Good, Jay Fratt on X at Jay Fratt, and Positive Intentions Media on X at PubSec Media.
It is our duty.
I really want to say thank you.